From an internet fraught with danger, three heroes brave the void to bring you the Digital and Dice Podcast.
This is the Digital and Dice Podcast for Monday, December 10th, 2018, and show number 168 is go. I am your host, Mark Boutte.
I am Insert Brian here.
And I'm Sound Guy Steven, on video for the first time.
Yes.
Well,
we can see you. Oh,
you'd actually step this way slightly.
Yeah.
There we go. Hey.
We can see you. You're really here.
He's a real boy.
Oh boy!
For those of you following at home, you'll note that our microphones sound a little off today, and that's because, well, before the show, the soundboard decided not to be recognized by OBS anymore, just for giggles. So this is being done on the new webcam, which is taking all of the audio from the room, which means you'll hear every little thing that happens.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a fun thing.
It's unfortunate, but temporary.
It is extremely temporary. Thank you for dealing with it. If you do not continue listening to this on the audio side, or if you, for whatever reason, decide to turn away, we don't blame you for this one, but we do have some fun stuff.
I'm not saying that we don't blame you. We can totally blame you still. It's not going to be necessarily justified.
That's fair. So we apologize for the crappy audio, but we will be back up and running as of next week. So thank you for your patience on that part.
So Mark, what you been up to?
Testing things. There is things I've been going about, kind of upgrading with the studio. We are gearing up for the next seasons of Hazardous Endeavors, SGO Files, Creature Pasta, and the ongoing podcast itself.
Oh, joy. Yeah, have you had any time for, like, games?
Yeah. I've been playing a lot of Dark Souls 3.
Oh, so. How terribly good for you?
So we've actually...
It's okay. It's the easiest one in the entire franchise, ladies and gentlemen.
Right. So I wanted to play multiplayer, and our friend McMindflayer was talking to me about, hey, you know, I want to see if we can get you and I to actually co-op on Dark Souls 3, which is, I guess, kind of an ordeal.
Always a little bit ominous when it's you and co-op.
Right. So we wanted to try it out, and the thing about co-op in Dark Souls is that it's all part of the thing where you're a phantom and you get summoned in to help with things. But there's a whole ton of limitations on it and like things that kind of mess things up. So we had to do a lot of back and forth with it, testing. Like, one evening was entirely testing. But then, like, last night, we played for hours, killed a bunch of bosses, did a bunch of stuff, just murdered some other players that invaded.
You know what happens when they don't actually phantom to you? You just got ghosted.
Oh.
Wow.
Right. And all of you get to see that wonderful joke done here on the new camera, which actually has focus on the entire side of the table.
I won't blame you if you do.
If I murder him with this giant die 20?
Yes. You sick fuck! You sick fuck!
Sorry.
Hey, have a good evening. Hey, welcome. Hey, Desirion, thank you so much for showing up. So it's been a little bit of Dark Souls 3, a little bit of playing around with the PlayStation, Final Fantasy 15. I'm still trying to get to the end game content there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm a bit of a whore for fireproof games.
Okay. You want to define that a little bit more?
I picked up The Room on Switch.
Oh. Gotcha.
That will be the fifth platform that I purchased that single game out.
Okay, I don't feel nearly as bad about my Skyrim playing now.
So iPad.
Yeah.
Kindle.
Right.
Google Play.
Because why not?
Yeah. PC. And now Switch.
Okay. Yeah.
I do enjoy the Room series of games.
And I will more than likely be streaming the most recent Room game because it was requested because Blue Orbs.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Old sins.
Oh, hi.
Good game.
Blue Orbs. Everyone, Blue Orbs.
Blue
Orbs, everyone. blue orbs.
Okay. I have no idea.
Yeah, neither do I.
This, but that's okay. I don't need to get all the jokes. I don't.
Okay, so what are you going up to?
Well, I've been playing some more Minecraft lately.
That's fantastic, Brian. So I'd like to move on.
Oh, come on. I've been having a fun adventure gathering and raising families of llamas. And that's very fun and very engaging. I have to make a whole lot of hay bales for that because they need an entire hay bale.
So what are you hearing Skyrim? Because I'm hearing Skyrim.
Nope, I've not been playing Skyrim.
That's about right.
I have not played Skyrim since I hooked up the computer after moving. Been very, very clear on that.
The llama mod.
Yeah. You see this? This is my bleeding new face.
Really? Really? You can monitor my Steam stuff. But, no, I've been playing some of that. I've been really tempted to buy Battlefield 5.
Yeah.
Really tempted. Like, I keep on having my... the cursor hovering over the purchase button.
And one of these days you'll just slip and, oh no.
I accidentally bought it. I'm going to have to play this fantastic, beautiful looking game.
Right.
Yeah, I've been trying to pick up a couple different games, but I have money, but Christmas.
Yeah. I've actually been told I'm not allowed to buy anything else until after the Christmas season so that I don't have to worry about accidentally buying something that was gifted.
I'm not allowed to buy Age of Sigmar models for myself until after Christmas.
Yeah.
No, I got more of them.
Of course you did.
Because I was having a beer down at Blue Sky, and it turns out that when you kill a keg, you're given a gift card, and it turned into more.
It turns out that when you're drinking in your game store, you're likely to buy more things.
So you bought models instead of the Dristwarden game?
Yes, I did buy models instead of the
Mary Sue
board game.
Right.
That's good. Because fuck that guy. Seriously. Where's Mary Sue?
Speaking of fucking that guy, we're going to move on to our main topic.
And that's me out for the night.
So why don't we go ahead and move on with our main topic, which goes a little something like this. Weathering the weather using environmental hazards. Yes, indeed. This is part of our GM 201 series, our ongoing GM workshop style discussion. Because you missed that first part of the topic there.
Oh,
where it says right there. Yeah.
No, is it right?
It's right there.
Right there?
Yes, right there. So yes, GM 201, weathering the weather. We're going to be talking about the weather.
So how's the weather up there?
It's funny because we're all tall.
Yeah.
Like we're all
same height.
I was going to say, we're all within an inch in height of each other. So, you know, it all makes sense there. No, we're going to be talking about weather and your campaign setting or your game or your mini adventure, whatever it is you're running, and the impacts that you can have with different forms of weather, introducing not only the fantastical stuff, but also how you can use like normal weather patterns and such to add depth to your game, to make for interesting encounters, and really bring life to the world, rather than just have everyone running through an idyllic summer landscape all the time.
It's always sunny. Are you in the mountain? Well, it feels a little cold.
It's always sunny in the Forgotten Realms. So the main thing that we're going to be going over, though,
and brings a whole new meaning to the Halfling's Gem,
where Wolfgar screws up everything and Driss falls asleep. the concept of what we're going about, though, is that weather is something that isn't really... I mean, there are discussions about weather patterns in the DMG and a little bit, I believe, in the Player's Handbook, but they don't go into some of the depth that you can, and it kind of makes you lose out on some of the flavor you can get and how some of the mechanics of normal weather can really affect how your players are going about stuff. So, and then again, as we're talking about unique weather patterns, so the...
turning that shit to 11.
Right. You know, as a skeleton there says in our chat, you know, we had 3 magical tornadoes in a row. It was BS. Yeah, so that's something we'll definitely be addressing when it comes to like
random rolling. The new Just Cause?
Yeah, seriously.
Rolling for weather, that ought to be fun.
Right. So the idea and the whole randomness of rolling for weather, but yeah, we'll get to that in a moment. But the other concept of adding unique weather patterns to your setting that or your campaign world that might be a really fun way of making it, like, you know, yours, you know, that no other campaign gets to have this one weather pattern that really affects how everything functions in that world.
It, unless you're like in a Brandon Sanderson novel, because that is something that I think is unifying throughout the entirety of any of his novels, is there's some sort of apocalyptic weather pattern that fucks with everyone's life.
Right. It's almost like the Dragon Riders of Pern with the red stuff.
The silk,
yeah. It was basically a weather pattern for most intents and purposes.
I mean, ish. Stable alien invasion, something. I don't know. You have to get really deep into Pern to understand whatever the fuck is happening.
That's entirely fair. So the idea of introducing some sort of weather pattern into your game that you can, like, make yours or utilize, there are some ground rules and some things that you should really think about when you're doing it and how it can make or break your game because of it. So one of the things I want to consider is, what impact is the weather going to have on the PCs?
Well, I mean, if you are in the effort of hunting something down, your tracking is going to be impacted ridiculously by things as simple as rain.
Truth. Yeah.
Unless for some reason your ranger only rolls 20s.
I mean, that happens.
So,
Steven.
Hide and go seek.
The concept of weather affecting your game. Now, there is a balance to be had here. And this is really important because when you're thinking about how your players are going to interact with the weather, remember the weather, more often than not, is a fairly consistent thing. So, say you want to have a torrential downpour and your party has to travel through it, right? You might be tempted to say, oh, well, I'm going to have my players roll every hour to see if they're hurting themselves trudging through the muck, or whether they're having, whether the stuff in their pack is getting drenched or what have you.
All right. I mean, yeah.
And this is kind of going to the extremes of it, but when you really think about it, how much reality you use in your game or not, there are things to consider. Like, does the wizard spell book get completely drenched because of the fact that it's been raining nonstop for 2 days?
I think that's a little rough, because that's like hitting one of their primary class, like, features.
Sure.
Solely because it is their primary class feature.
Right. And the other thing about, like, say it's going to slow your travel. You know, your party needs to get from point A to point B, and they're dealing with the fact that it is snowing, right? So maybe they're slowing their speed for how they're getting there. Well, eventually, unless you're utilizing it for something interesting, weather is just a hindrance. It is an environmental hazard that the players cannot defeat, per se. And all it is something to frustrate them.
Unless they get a higher level druid, then they can defeat the weather anytime they want.
Right, and that's actually something we'll get to as well when it comes to how to either bypass or mitigate any of the effects that weather has on your party. So the impact on how difficult normal action should be is something you really need to consider when you're putting in some sort of weather. If you're going to have sandstorms, is it a sandstorm just because sandstorms happen? Right. Brian's dancing. So the concept of having your characters in your game be inconvenienced by the...
Throw something at him.
No, he's right there. Just,
I know. Oh, all right.
And besides, someone asked him to.
All right.
So how much the weather is going to affect them is something you're going to have to gauge with your players, because if you do it too much, your players are just going to get upset and they're not going to want to actually do anything. They might hunker down and say, you know what, we're just going to wait this out. And your campaign basically gets into a lull of having to just wait the weather out, which should never be an option if it's an interesting game where stuff's supposed to happen.
That sort of derails things.
Yeah. So the other part of it is, how much preparation are your players going to need, or how much insight are you going to give them into what sort of weather pattern it is? So how prepared can they be? If the party is deciding they're going to go up into the mountains, giving them the option of purchasing cold weather gear or warm clothing of some kind is something that allows them to feel like it's something they're going in prepared. It's, they don't have to necessarily make as many endurance checks or constitution saves because they're prepared for the weather.
And one of the things that helps with that is your description of the environment as you're going. Because there's one thing to say, you're traveling down the road, now it gets into the snowy mountains and you didn't have cold weather gear, to you're telling them that as they're leaving these pastoral areas that they're getting into these hilly regions and foothills, and they might want to pick up some cold weather gear somewhere in the town before they actually hit the passes.
Right, exactly. So when you're allowing your players to be prepared for the encounter or prepared for the weather, again, it's not out of the ordinary for a DM to be able to say, hey, you know, this is what you're going into. Do what you need to do. And if the players decide, eh, it'll be fine, or we'll rely on spell casting instead of getting cold weather gear, sure, let them do what they're going to do, but giving them the option so that they can make that informed decision will make them feel a bit better about what you're doing. So,
I know we're going to be covering this a little.
Okay.
And it doesn't necessarily even make it so it mitigates it entirely. You could say cold weather gear doesn't make it so they don't have to make these checks or something. It could just give them advantage on the checks. It's a way of, I guess, easing them into it a little bit more than just throwing them naked and afraid into the snow.
Or randomly rolling for weather, where even the DM isn't sure about what's going to happen, because, you know what, I mean, as much as some people might be like, oh, well, the weather is unpredictable, I'm just going to roll randomly. Well, they're dice, and DMs are fickle sometimes, and they might make a decision that they're just going to randomly be like, oh, I didn't like that roll, I don't want them to have a snowstorm, a tornado. And then the next time they roll, it's like, oh, it doesn't make any sense for them to have this earthquake tornado, you know? And then you get three of them in a row, and, you know,
suddenly you're in just gusts.
Right. So the randomly rolling weather doesn't give anyone the opportunity to prepare for it. It's just thrown in because, lol, random dice rolls.
I like to think of weather being much more, when we say weather and we talk about environmental issues, literally, weather is a major part of an environment. So you're not going to get a blizzard out in the middle of the desert if things are going okay.
Right.
The Sahara doesn't get blizzards, and you're probably not going to deal with that big of a sandstorm in, like, the Himalayas.
Right, exactly.
But if it becomes part of the storytelling aspect, that is also really freaking cool.
Yeah. So whether you're going to be utilizing crazy weather or not, you know, being able to prepare for it, being able to deal with it, but then, like you're saying, finding ways to maybe use this as a benefit to the players, you know, whether it's something where, say, their equipment allows them like advantage on an endurance check or something, or maybe the fact that the players are going to utilize a sandstorm to sneak into a city because everyone's visibility is down, so you can use it to grant, you know, advantages on their stealth checks because of the roaring winds, the lack of visibility, that kind of stuff.
Which can always be helpful for those who have disadvantage on their stealth checks.
Exactly. Someone in full plate trying to sneak into a desert city might have a lot better chance of doing it if there's a haboob happening at the same time.
I guess it could even work because they're going to get less actual damage from being out in the middle of a sandstorm by being covered in, like, steel plates.
Possibly, yeah. It'll definitely be shinier when they're done.
The chainmail's going to come out looking pristine.
Absolutely. As was brought up in the chat, Skellington mentioned, says, when I think of weather, I think of the blizzard scene in Lord of the Rings when they're going to the mountains of Moria. So the idea of, you know, they were heading to the pass of Caradhras.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, like, snowing, and they're on this, like, precipice and all that. That's a great example of having the party be, you know, put into a situation where the weather itself is their enemy. There's nothing they can do to fight the weather at that point. It's literally, they're either going to try to power through and deal with avalanches and snowstorms and blizzards and high winds.
And goddamn Boromir's picking up your damn magic rings.
Right. Or they're going to have to head back and deal with something else. You know, weather as an idea, as a hazard, can be exactly that. It can be something the DM can put out there to negate access to a certain area. You know, what? And other games have done this as well. World of Warcraft had areas where it's like, oh, you can't go there. There's a big storm happening. Or like this zone is cut off unless you go through a particular area.
Yeah.
You know, it's the way that they deal with it is, you know, the storm or the weather is actually blocking you from getting to where you want to be. And that's fine. That's a great in-setting way of saying this is dangerous. Now, they can do it, but it's going to suck if they do.
Yeah, it's one of those things of you can't actually tell your players what they want to do. But you can certainly give them consequences for blindly ignoring your advice.
Also true. So one other thing to consider here is when we're talking about players using the weather to their advantage, we're also talking about enemies that can use the weather to their advantage. So if you have a snowstorm, well, chances are you're going to have creatures that are used to being in snow, that you can either see further through it, are resistant to the cold, can move through it without penalty.
Yetis.
Yeah, so having encounters where the enemy is not at the same disadvantage that the players are means you could even use lower challenge rating creatures against the same party and have a good encounter because it's less of that the party is, you know, that the enemy is stronger. It's that the party is hindered to the point where the enemies at their normal strength are able to outmaneuver or out-attack them because they're not suffering the same disadvantages.
A group of 10 goblins just in a cave aren't necessarily a challenge for any party over level, what, like 3 or 4?
Give or take.
But a group of goblins that are using guerrilla tactics and doing hit and run in the middle of mist that is so thick that players can only get like 5 feet of visibility, that is hardcore.
Yeah, or even having a fog that is ridiculously thick where a creature that has blind sense, that doesn't need to see, is able to constantly attack and get away. And that can be for an encounter that your party will always remember, and then they will always try to fight the fog anytime they see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know,
whether it's enraged party, everyone soils themselves.
Whether it's the players using it to their advantage or the enemies, you know, encounters can get much more interesting and involved when you're doing that.
It's sort of like you can use, if you have a character who is good at blind fighting or you're playing a drow or something like that. Oh, I cast darkness. I beat the crap out of whatever's in this little orb of no light.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the other things that we're talking about here are like bypassing this. Like, what do you do as a DM when you set up an encounter and you say, I want there to be this ridiculously horrible heat wave that's coming through and like bushes are being set on fire and there are all these issues. Well, that's all well and good, and it sounds like it'd be a really difficult encounter until the cleric goes, endure elements. And then suddenly your whole party is basically immune to half of the environmental issues you just put out there.
I remember you were quite salty when we were in the middle of essentially like the Sahara Desert, and suddenly we're just tripping around. Everything is good. And you're like, why is everything good? Well, this caster can create water, and this caster can cast endure elements on everyone.
Yeah, everyone was
good.
They had enough food and water to survive every day normal, just fine because of creating food and water as a spell. And they had endure elements on, which meant that they could wander from one end of the desert to the other with zero issues. So the environment basically became a non-issue at that point. And it, I was, as a DM, it was my fault because I didn't read into it. I didn't realize that they had access to the spell. But the sandstorm was still problematic for them. But above and beyond that, normal traveling through the desert, you didn't end up with that class of like crawling along the dunes, screaming water, you know. It was just like, okay, yeah, it was hot. and sunny, and they didn't care because they could endure temperatures up to like 300 degrees Fahrenheit or some BS.
Okay, really quick, Gabriel in the chat, a tsunami sand wall. I really love the idea of an ancient city finally revealing itself within this desert, the vast ocean-like desert, and it creates a tsunami as it is like magically revealed. And that is an adventure hook of you're on the edge of a desert and you see a community completely wiped out by a sand wall tsunami.
Oh yeah.
That's hardcore. I love that. I'm going to use that for something. I don't know what.
So as Draconic is mentioning that over in the YouTube chat, you know, they are burning spell slots for that, but for everyday travel where they're not having encounters, where the encounter was supposed to basically be the actual environment itself, it turned from a let's try to do some cool survival things to wake up, cast your spells, and move on with the rest of your day. At that point, they were high enough level. I think you guys were like 7th or 8th level, so burning one or two 1st or 2nd level spell slots was like, whatever. You can get through a couple encounters that day and not break a sweat. So, you know, it's something where we don't have to necessarily worry about those particular things. But
I get it! Break a sweat!
Right. But we also want to see, like, if you are going to figure in a way of bypassing the weather entirely, and I'm not forgetting UA Skeleton, I will get to the day-night and sci-fi weather options as well. But if you're going to introduce the weather, is there a way of bypassing it? Can the players just cast one spell, or are they allowed to just completely ignore the effects of this environment? And if so, what's the point of having that environment? Or are you throwing it in basically for mood or for the story? Like there has to be some reason it's there, otherwise it's superfluous. And you know, as much as everyone loves role-playing, as much as everyone loves having an involved world, when things are superfluous, they bog things down. We're still playing a game. We're trying to get through encounters. We're trying to do a thing. And if the DM spends 20 minutes describing the weather and then everyone bypasses any effect the weather might have, it's wasted time. So
I think that 20 minutes describing it was wasted.
Yeah, that's the idea. So if you are going to throw it in there with a way of bypassing it, at least make that way of bypassing it be interesting, especially for the more fantastical styles of weather that we're going to talk about very shortly.
And honestly, if they do end up pulling a rabbit out of their hat and be like, oh, I have this, we don't have to worry about that. That's okay, because there's a lot of ways you can improvise and make a weather-relevant encounter with a monster or something like that, that legitimately uses the weather to their advantage that the party will then have to deal with as a challenge. It's just something to keep in mind that just because they find a way to bypass your initial challenge of the environmental stress doesn't mean that you cannot still use the momentum you built for that to do something else.
Absolutely. And, you know, when it comes to making those memorable encounters and making sure that, you know, when you're throwing that weather in, making it something so that it really brings home what's happening, you know, dramatic encounters that happen in the rain, or, you know, happy and fun encounters that are taking place on a bright, sunny, you know, summer day. You know, the feeling of that is something that you can throw in there. So there are reasons to include it, even if it's not for mechanics. And it's not like anyone's forcing anyone to use weather, but thinking about it mechanically as a DM can really enhance the game or the encounter that you're doing. One thing about that, and this is something you'll see in a lot of different games, whether it be D&D or any sort of video game, is the use of weather and climate as a focus for a dungeon or an encounter itself. So think about any Zelda game. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have like a fire temple, you're gonna have like a water temple, an ice temple, you know.
In Link to the Past, when you are approaching the castle and it is raining and pouring down rain, there's thunder happening, you get a feeling of ominous gravitas to the situation.
Yeah.
And using that to help set the tone of what's happening in your games is a great way of getting everyone on the same page, getting everyone in the good headspace for where you want to take them.
Absolutely.
And then you go to the ice temple and your profane vocabulary at 13
expands.
Right. So the concept of having your environments, you know, as infuriating as some of those encounters in dungeons can be, like that fucking water temple.
Oh, what? Your water temple? Do you have a problem with the water temple?
I had a problem with what was being said during the water temple.
Do we have, what, like 2 hours of footage of you trying to fail through the water temple?
At least 2 hours of audio on that.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
But when you're thinking about how to utilize the environment like that, if you're going to have an ice temple, you can basically like a microcosm, this little area where the weather is different. So you can have them dealing with these weather encounters in a place that doesn't necessarily make sense because, you know,
magic.
You know, having like the old mage had like an area of his dungeon that was a cold freezer, and they have to make their way through slipping on the ice, fighting little ice mephits or whatever. And that can be a really fun encounter because you're using like a small amount of weather to really kind of futz with it. Or in the case of like underwater levels, like the water temple, where you have to deal with the environment as it is, whether there's like a tsunami happening, whether there is, you know, you're actually swimming down underneath the water to have to go do something.
Gelatinous cube in fog.
Problems.
Oh, yeah. Problem. I like it.
So, you know, utilizing it on a smaller scale, whether it be for an individual adventure, whether it be for a small dungeon, whatever, you know, weather can be included in small amounts too. If you don't want to make it this whole thing where you're suddenly having to figure out what the weather is like in this fake country, you know, that you've designed, and you now have to start drawing out like wind and weather patterns over your campaign world because you need that level of specificity to make things work.
Unless you're dealing with very specific classes, there is no way for them to actually be able to get a macro idea of weather patterns.
You know, you say that, and then you go and look at the old MERPs Lord of the Rings role-playing, where they legitimately had weather patterns in their role-playing book to tell you where in Middle-earth, around what time of year, the temperature and weather is going to be.
That is because they had Tolkien's notes to work off of, and that's just an unfair advantage.
And if you're pedantic enough to do that with your role-playing system, then there you go.
Play Fatal.
Yeah, Mimic has a chest in a gelatinous cube. Yes, thank you, Ace. You're a horrible human being. So another thing to think about before we move on to some of the plot hook ideas and some of the concepts, we're going to talk about some of the cool different kind of weather patterns you can use, is how does the weather pattern affect the lives of the people who live there? Are we talking droughts that cause a food shortage so that when you go to the inn, you're not going to get a full meal? Or maybe there's not enough water to go around, you know? Or maybe this blizzard has shut down the trade routes so that towns are not getting the supplies they need and people are getting sick. You know, how is the weather affecting the people around it? Are they ready for it? Were they prepared? Is it some crazy dagger storm and suddenly everyone just goes into the huts with metal roofs to get away from it? But that's something that happens every summer, so they're just kind of used to it.
I like the idea of PCs coming into it and like, wow, they've got these delightful metal roofs. That's so weird. Everyone goes inside. They're like, oh, well, it's just a little rain. That never killed nobody. And then the dagger storm happened.
Right.
And that's how we lost the mage.
Mages. Shield only works for so long. So having
6 seconds.
Having the idea of your people in your world being affected by the weather can make the world feel like it's more involved. You know, if everyone's always caught off guard by everything, you know, like these are farmers, they make their lives, you know, farming and knowing, like at least having an idea of how the weather is gonna be going. If every time they're outside, it's like, oh my God, now it's a hailstorm. You know, it's like, because you're randomly rolling the weather, it's gonna screw things up. It's a little, you gotta have a little bit of stuff in there that makes that veil of, you know, believability has to kind of maintain there.
Unless the hail balls are the size of softballs, it's not going to be that much of an issue.
Right. It's constant over the course of however long.
Yeah. Unless you're in a dwarven community and they don't really give a crap about it.
Also true. So whether it's affecting your campaign area or not, something to consider. Because, you know, the dwarves in under the mountain really aren't going to care about the lightning and thunderstorm that's happening above. it's not really going to be affecting them. So
they might use it.
Also true. The gnomes certainly would.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, at this point, I'd like to kind of take about 10 minutes or so to talk about some ideas for, you know, now that we've talked about how to use different weather, I want to talk about some of the kinds of weather.
To 11.
So some of the ideas that we were thinking about and kind of tossing around. So one of the ones that I really enjoy, and this is actually something, the concept is very similar to the old Dragon Mech book, is the idea of the surface world itself is basically a smoking ruin because chunks of the moon are constantly falling down. And there are meteor showers happening all the time.
It's where you get delicious, delicious warp stone.
Right. But the idea is that's why people travel in mechs and they live in city mechs and travel around, because literally the weather is the moon is falling and monsters fall from the moon and chunks of rock fall from the moon. And it's just not generally a good idea to be outside. So people either live underground or they live in giant walking mechs. So as a weather pattern, it's on the extreme edge. It's like way up there.
Are you sure? It sounds a little tame to me.
I mean, kind of. You know, it does have its certain appeal. The natural danger of living outside of a mech or being or any sort of traveling is you have to deal with the fact that at any point, rocks from the sky are going to fall and attempt to murder you.
On the bright side, if you ever get done with a campaign and you're in that the world, you can just say, rocks fall, you all die. Get the fuck out of my house.
Pretty much.
Sounds about right.
Rocks falling and killing everyone is basically the worst kind of weather pattern. But I love it. I thought it was a really cool interpretation of a way of using a natural environment hazard as an integral part of your campaign setting.
Much on a time loop.
Also true.
Yeah.
Another fun one is the idea of, like, a fog that comes rolling out of the mountains. You know, for whatever reason, this thick pea soup fog rolls out every night and envelops the towns that are around here. And people who leave their houses just disappear into it. You know, this magical fog that, you know, just takes people in the night, whether it's a creature that travels through fog or whether it's actually fog itself, is, you know, just part of the concept.
They came in the mists.
Yeah.
They walked like a man, but also like a bear.
So, you know, these are just a couple fantasy examples. If you're going more for sci-fi, this is when we can do cool stuff like gravity storms and, you know, stuff where just reality itself is being torn apart by the fact that, you know, there's this weird, like, time scar making its way across and you have to, like, intercept it to go, like, change the past, you know?
But I want to go into the time star. I want to get back to the time scar.
You do. That's because William Shatner's in there.
Well, yeah. We could hang out. Chop wood. Hang out with Guinan. Like, come on. Who doesn't want to go into the time scar?
Right. But that's another good example of a weather phenomenon. I mean, whether it's space-bound or whether it's something that just happens around your world, you know, it's a really cool idea of how to use a natural weather phenomenon and then just kind of crank it up and say, I guess reality's fucked. So, you know, that works.
When you make up reality, you can fuck it anytime you want.
In any way?
That's...
Wow, guys. Whoa. I mean, yes, but... And but
I got
yes.
Weird quick.
Giggity.
The fog loves you so much.
The fog loves you. The starfish loves you!
Another idea was like a rare disease hits a town and the only cure for it is the blood of a creature that only appears during the harshest of blizzards, which means you have an adventure where your party has to go like into the middle of a blizzard and hunt a creature that lives there and bring back its blood for the purpose of making an antidote for something. You know, this is a way of using it as a small kind of one-shot adventure, but also having the ability to throw at them and say, oh, well, okay, cold weather gear, endurance spells, things like that. Low visibility is not really much you can do about that.
And a creature that gets to ignore all these wonderful terrain impasses.
Yeah. And you can do that for, you know, sandstorms, you can do that for blizzards, you can do that for whatever.
He said the magic word!
Right. So... So, you know, these are just a couple ideas of like weird weather patterns you can use, like a little adventure kind of thing you can do with it. Because, you know, it's something that is underused. It's something that I think that more DMs can utilize and give a better feel for their adventure world. But I would like to, at this point, mention that while we're talking about kind of the mechanics and the way of including it in your game in different ways, Drakenik did an amazing blog entry over on on his webpage, drakenik.com. This was on July 22nd, 2018. He did a blog post about using weather as kind of a foreshadowing and descriptive tool. And I really recommend taking a look over that. If it's not already, it will be in the show notes. So we want to make sure that you have a chance to go over and take a look at that, because it's really fun and really insightful. And it's a good way of kind of bookending what we're talking about by giving a little bit more of the narrative side of it rather than, say, the mechanics that we've been going on about.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, while we're standing here, I'm going to go ahead and put that right here in the show notes.
Why wasn't it already in the show?
Because I forgot, because I only have one job.
Only had one job.
I have one job. It's one just doing job. Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, indeed. If you want to hear or talk more about the weather, join us on our Discord hangout. We'll talk about it later. You know, we're always willing to expand upon what we're talking about here.
Totes.
So, but right about now, why don't we go ahead and go to our Twit-based mail tumble site, Discord?
Yes!
Things are getting weird.
Yeah. And we have a couple answers to last week's question from show number 168, which went a little like this.
Leave your mark. Name an island in this world. Bonus, send us a concept for the island to make it unique.
Indeed.
And first one we've got is from Dammit42, posting for my island. Tanzana is a grassland savanna of dangerous herd beasts and several tabaxi clans.
I like it. That one's because Dammit's actually part of that campaign. Dammit's actually already included that. So that's part of our campaign world as it stands.
Yes, indeed.
Grim Ace responds, says, Miri and Rith. The split kingdom, the origin lost in time. The kingdom was shaped after Japanese-style kingdoms. Miri is currently ruled by an Oni that slaves its people. They war with whatever is near them. If they ever found out there was the other half of the city around, they would try to take it over. Rith is controlled by a hive-minded style of society that hides in the depths of the city. They know what happened to the city originally, but choose to keep secret in hopes that the other half never learns of it.
Ooh, nice!
I really love the idea of having an island that was like legit split down the middle. Like the throne room itself was cut in half so that you have like the actual throne is in two pieces, and one side of it is on this kind of gaping open side, and then the other one's like in this other island that's far away. I think it's a really good idea, so I'm really appreciative of that one.
All right, MChief 30. Kakitori is an island in the Aether Sea, controlled mostly by turtles who hunt big monsters like sky whale. They use ships like submarines to hunt and trade to the middle islands.
I love that!
Yep. And he sent in another one as well.
Valtrist is an island controlled by a vampire in the Aether Sea. Few have seen it, and far fewer have come back alive to tell about it.
Indeed.
Dun, dun, dun. I like these.
Yeah, these ones are fun. And I'm, again, more than likely going to be trying to include these not only in the world itself, but in further adventures as I start my characters down their paths. One game down, we're going to, by the time this airs on iTunes, they'll be into their second game.
Yes!
So it should be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I think that is all the responses we got for that one.
Yes, so, indeed.
We're going to move on to the next question, which goes a little something like this.
Fill in the blank. Run! It's the blank NATO!
Yeah.
You got to do it in the... It's the blank NATO! The blank NATO!
Right. So we want to know if you had the ability to, I don't know, make one of those terrible Sharknado movies or whatever, that if you had the ability to say, like, what kind of NATO is it for you? So, I don't know, Steven, what do you got? What kind of NATO would it be?
First thing that comes to mind would be a Blizzard NATO.
Blizzard NATO. Now, are we talking ice storms, or are we talking Dairy Queen?
Get that feeling of deja vu, deja vu, deja vu, deja vu.
I'm thinking it's like a Dairy Queen Blizzard tornado, so it's literally just a bunch of Dairy Queen Blizzards flinging around.
I would leap into that.
And they're just like,
I think we all would.
What's great, though, is that as they're turned upside down, they don't fall out, or you get your money back. So, yeah, I like that one. I like the Blizzard NATO. Let's see in the chat. Oh, Uber Madface. It's got to be said. Dick NATO.
Dick NATO?
A veritable NATO of dicks.
You know, I'm pretty sure that there's some dildo factory in the Midwest that has been hit by a tornado.
Really?
So there was just
hoping.
Filled with these floppy.
Yet, unfortunately, that didn't hit the news.
Damn. Let's see. A Skellington in the chat says, Mark NATO. I mean, okay. Multiple of me were just a bunch of people named Mark.
Because, I mean, there's enough Marks around.
Yeah.
Or a tornado of you. Pieces of you.
Oh, God.
I guess.
Okay, no. I love the fact that the connotations of this are that, like, Sharknado could literally just mean a tornado with one shark in it.
Yeah.
Because shark is also plural. So it's like, when you think about that, do you have to take that extra step, or is it implied by the fact that there's a tornado of them, or just a tornado containing them?
I think you're getting pedantic.
Am I getting too far into this?
Yes.
Am I tired
you're
of
digging
these?
Too deep.
Yes, A. Skellington.
You're digging too deep.
I'm tired of these motherfucking marks in my motherfucking tornadoes.
Yes.
I mean, hell, if it gives me a chance to meet Markiplier, fuck, why not? I believe...
Is it because he's a centaur?
Yeah, seriously. Lightning NATO. Thank you, MG30. That's a good one. It's just like ball lightning just floating around.
Either that or it's got constant arcs throughout it, like ribbons of it.
I've seen that Photoshop.
That would be cool to show.
That, yeah, absolutely.
That'd be a cool evocation spell.
So what do you got?
Oh, Axe NATO. And I'm not talking about Axe body spray, though. That would be worse.
Nah, bro, you just walk out and put your arms up and you're good for a day.
Until the one guy walks up and goes,
I mean.
And then it's a fire tornado.
And then it's a flame NATO, yes.
Flame NATO.
But it's a bunch of bros just catching on fire everywhere.
I don't see it outside.
Yes. That's awful. But no, like, just like, think of it like a bad spell.
You just walk out and you're like,
I cast a tornado full of axes.
I'm never not going to think of it as axe body spray now.
Okay.
It's forever ruined for me.
Well, you know, that's what axe body spray does.
See, yeah, okay. Thing. An axe body spray tornado would be a bro-nado.
Bro-nado.
Bro-nado!
Yeah, but it can lift.
It certainly
bro.
Can. I believe the one I had thought about was a splat NATO. Now, I say splat because it makes you think about what could be in there, like an amorphous green goo or something that just happens to be flying around at high speeds. Whatever it is, I don't care what is in that tornado, it has to make the splat sound when it impacts things. You know, not a crunch, none of that, just, it has to go splat. Or it could be splat like the Nickelodeon game show. You know, was Mark Summers in that one?
I don't know.
So it could be another Mark NATO. I mean, we could just be going down that rabbit hole. I don't remember who's the host of Nickelodeon Splat.
I do not.
Someone's got to help me out with that.
Yeah, give me a sec.
So yeah, Orc NATO. Yes, perfect. Thank
Orc
you,
NATO, fantastic. We love it
with their vehicles. Yes. So yes, we
and
want
Brad to hear, rotate faster.
We want to hear from you, dear digitizers. Once again, that question that we are asking of you goes a little something like this.
Fill in the blank. Run! It's the blank NATO!
It really does go like that. I mean, I can't have it go any other way.
It really, yeah.
So as we're moving forward, we want to go ahead and say a few thank yous. First off, I want to thank you all for joining us here tonight. And again, thank you for putting up with our audio quality. I'm thanking people for that.
I was going to say, you're thanking before you thank.
But I'm also going to thank our wonderful patrons.
Our patrons!
Yes, indeed. I want to thank you to all of you who are still continuing to support us, who give us even a couple bucks a day, you know, for a month. It really does add up, and it really does help pay for stuff.
Let's just get things like the camera that we're on now.
Yes.
It does. And actually, that is one of the things that this helped pay for. So thank you. It's going to be much better as Hazardous Endeavors comes rolling out in January, with being able to actually have the whole side of the table be in focus. So thank you to our patrons. Thank you so much for being awesome. And we want to thank most of you by name, actually, but all of our current patrons. So first up, Astonishing Legends.
Gold Bolt.
Desmond.
Hi, Desmond.
Patrick M.
Square Bear 23.
Both to go.
Chubby Wildcat.
Unchipped Channel.
And Retail.
Thank you all for being our patrons. Thank you for being awesome.
Much appreciated.
Your continued support does really help, and hopefully it'll show with our increasing quality as things don't fail me right before shows.
Yeah, but hey, it's okay.
Right. Yeah?
Do you know that we use Pippa.io for hosting our RSS feeds?
Do we?
Yeah, it's actually really great. They've got really good customer service, and we find more and more services, more and more places where they're putting our podcast out.
They're shoving our podcast in every hole.
Everywhere. God.
Why can you turn it that way?
They're just pushing,
shoving it, twisting it, and putting it everywhere they can.
That's not the script.
They're gently rubbing our podcast over everything.
Why are they doing
this? It's easy to add episodes, easy to update.
Slowly massaging our podcast as it disappears and gets exfoliated into your skin. That's what our podcast does. Thank you, Pippa.io, for being awesome and hosting our show.
Making us the coconut oil of podcasts.
That's also true. Yes, we are just appreciative of Pippa.io being awesome, being our host, and having great support and helping us do what we do.
I need a drink.
It is true. But you know what? Finally, last of all, we want to thank all of you wonderful Digidizers for joining us this week. You know, you can keep in touch with us at our various social networking sites.
You can reach us on Facebook at facebook.com/digitalanddice.
Until they remove us from posting adult content, you can find us at Tumblr at digitalanddice.tumblr.com.
For email, you can find us at digitalanddice@gmail.com.
Follow at digitalanddice on Twitter.
Tweet.
Okay, I'm just making a thing. Are you wondering? Yeah, no, seriously, the whole Tumblr thing?
No, I know about the Tumblr thing. It's like, but have we ever posted adult content before?
You don't know me.
We in fact do know you. We just don't know what you post.
That's the reason why the people I follow, like the list of people who the Digital and Dice Tumblr follows, is a hidden list. But don't forget, you can also donate to your favorite podcast on the internet, or us, by visiting patreon.com/digitalanddice. That is
patreon.com/digitalanddice.
Patreon.
Really? Patreon.
And of course, you can check us out on our website, www.digitalanddice.com, where you can listen to the most recent shows, you can respond to the question, you got links to our YouTube, our Twitch, our Discord, pretty much everything is there. It's a central location, makes it easy for everything. And we're going to host up some updates and such as we go. So definitely check us out there. It is the easiest way of finding everything else.
And hey, if you've got a moment, could you just leave us a simple little review on iTunes or whatever service you found us on? It really does help us get to as many people as possible. It is a huge thing. And if you feel like doing that, you are a hero.
Absolutely. Reviews are a great way of showing people that you enjoy their content. It helps out with the algorithm with podcasts, especially on iTunes and the features like that. So if you can do that, great. If you can't, don't worry about it, but tell your friends, let them know. You know, help us out whichever way you can. The more people are out there that are listening to us, the better off we'll be.
We leave you now with Skyward Sword, Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword, Sword of Storms by Mr. Hasan-san, to keep you entertained until next week when we return with more news, rants, opinions, and general internet leaks.
But never fear, we shall return.
And until then, Game on internet. And now I get to click some buttons.
Yep.
Stop the song.
I clicked the wrong button.
Which storm? You had one job. Brian, which storm?
Sandstorm!
Do